But I want this is a good time to talk to families and a good time to talk to dads especially. And I kind of want to begin with a little excerpt, a little article that was written by a 9-year-old girl. And I first heard this from James Dobson, who was president of Focus on the Family at the time. Didn't have the name of this little girl, but she is especially bright and quite perceptive and a little bit humorous. And it starts off with the title of it was, "What is a Grandmother?" Now, I know it's Father's Day, just hang loose, we'll get to there. See, what is a grandmother? And here's what a 9-year-old child wrote. She said, "A grandmother is a lady who has no children of her own. She likes other people's little boys and girls. A grandfather is a man grandmother. He goes for walks with the boys and they talk about fishing and stuff like that. Grandmothers don't have to do anything except to be there. They're old, so they shouldn't play hard or run. It's enough that they drive us to the market where the pretend horse is and have lots of dimes ready. Or if they take us for walks, they should slow down past things like pretty leaves or caterpillars, and they should never say, 'Hurry up.' Usually grandmothers are fat, but not too fat to tie your shoes. They wear glasses and funny underwear. They can take their teeth and gums off. How many of you..." No, never mind. I shouldn't ask that. Grandmothers don't have to be smart, only answer questions like, "Why isn't God married?" and "How come dogs chase cats?" Everybody should try to have a grandmother, especially if you don't have television. Listen to this last line. "Because they are the only grown-ups who have time." Now, this perceptive little child, twice, two references in that little story that is representative of most American families. She referred to it twice. Number one is fatigue, and number two is time pressure. Fatigue and time pressure pretty much defines American life all over the country, everywhere you go. Almost everybody you know is either physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, in every way overextended with so many irons in the fire they can't keep any of them hot. Everybody is exhausted with not enough time for the things that are really important, driven by the tyranny of the urgent so that the most significant things in life are neglected. Push, rush, hurry. We have a monument called Rushmore. We made a rocking chair so you could move while you're sitting down, working on the things to do list and never getting it finished. People work 40 plus hours a week, 50 weeks out of the year with a 2-week vacation that pretty much has the same time pressure and fatigue. You know, if we don't get to Orlando by 6, we'll lose our reservations and people come home exhausted from all the work, all the hard work disguised as fun. And it's not atypical, it's kind of a routine panic. It's constant. And we've convinced ourselves that it's just temporary. You know, well, John's in grad school right now, and as soon as he finishes his master's degree, we'll have... Or we just bought a new business and we're working 12 hours a day. But a year from now, it'll be different, and it's an illusion, or maybe a delusion, because one crisis flows into another and one urgency replaces the other, the one that we just left, and we careen down life, and husbands don't know their wives and wives don't know their husbands and parents don't know their children and children don't know their parents. And we finally come to the end of the road and wonder, where did our lives go and how quickly it gets away? And that made me think of Jerry Bach's famous song from Fiddler on the Roof when he wrote, "Is this the little girl I carried? Is this the little boy at play? I don't remember growing older. When did they? When did she get to be a beauty, and when did he grow to be so tall? Wasn't it yesterday when they were small? Sunrise, sunset, sunrise, sunset, swiftly flow the days. Seedlings turn overnight into sunflowers, blooming even as we gaze." Indeed, And nowhere is this fatigue and pressure more prevalent than it is among fathers. Putting food on the table and paying the bills is a priority, and the man who doesn't provide for his family is worse than an infidel, the Apostle Paul said. And balancing between work responsibilities and time for family is a delicate dance that requires great intention. Key word, great intention, effort, patience, and a constant focus on your priorities, Dad, of what's really important. Many fathers are overwhelmed at this point and lose touch with their kids because they're buried beneath agendas and schedules and the next client and the next business opportunity, carrying a briefcase full of work home so that you're not really there even when you're home. I've never met anyone who came to the end of their life and said, "Boy, I wish I'd spent more time at work." And some simply bail out because meaningful time with children, while rewarding, in fact, it is the most rewarding thing in life, but it can also be demanding, especially in those difficult teenage years when 17-year-olds know so much more than everybody else, especially you, and the current multiculture of confused identities and relative moral values and competing worldviews and secularism and pluralism and socialism and all the other isms that should have been wasms. The challenges are perhaps greater now than ever before. And how quickly it passes. I remember very well Carmen's second year at Lee. We living in Fresno, and Lee's in Tennessee, and it's a long way. And so we had bought her first car, and it was her and several other friends. She wasn't making that trip alone. And I stood out in the front and hugged her and kissed her goodbye and watched her as she drove away. And I thought, wasn't it just yesterday I was helping her navigate a tricycle? How quickly the time goes by. And Dad, if you're not careful, time and opportunities will slip through your fingers and be gone before you realize it. And the moments you will have lost are far more valuable than what you traded for them. And it brings me to that well-known song written by Harry Chapin, the familiar tune. The lyrics say, "My child arrived just the other day. He came to the world in the usual way, but there were planes to catch and bills to pay. He learned to walk while I was away, and he was talking before I knew it. And as he grew, he'd say, 'I'm going to be like you, Dad. I'm going to be just like you.' And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, Dad? I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. My son turned 10 just the other day. He said, 'Thanks for the ball, Dad. Come on, let's play. Can you teach me to throw?' I said, 'Not today. I got a lot to do.' He said, 'That's okay.' As he walked away, but his smile never dimmed, he said, 'I'm going to be like him. Yeah, you know, I'm going to be just like him.' And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon and little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, Dad? I don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then. Well, he came from college just the other day, so much like a man, I just had to say, 'Son, I'm proud of you. Can you sit for a while?' He shook his head and said with a smile, 'What I'd really like, Dad, is to borrow the car keys. See you later. Can I have them, please?' And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, son? I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. You know we'll have a good time then. I've long since retired and my son's moved away. I called him up just the other day. I said, 'I'd like to see you if you don't mind.' He said, 'I'd love to, Dad, if I could just find the time. You see, my new job's a hassle and the kids have the flu, but it's sure nice talking to you, Dad. It's been sure nice talking to you.' And as I hung up the phone, it occurred to me he'd grown up just like me. My boy was just like me. And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you coming home, son? I don't know when, but we'll get together then, Dad. We're going to have a good time then." Wow. I don't know who Harry Chapin was, but he certainly understood something about life. He couldn't have written those lyrics without knowing it. And so what I want to talk to you, Dads, about today, and hopefully to motivate you, I want to talk to you about the power of fathers. The power of fathers. And it's not a long message. But I want to talk to you about the power, the influence that you have, maybe as a means of motivating you to help you understand the priority that you absolutely must give to it. I know they say, you know, that this is a man's world, but I have to wonder, when a man is born, people ask, how's the mother? When he's married, they say, what a beautiful bride. When he dies, they ask, how much did he leave her? So I'm not sure if it is a man's world, but I will tell you this, a good man, and especially a good father, is indispensable. You ask, do children really need a father? Even in the midst of Hollywood's clips and turns, the answer is clear. Yes, there really is a power that only a father brings to his children. And the word father is found more than 1,100 times in Scripture. But while present in the Bible, fathers are often absent from the home. I read years ago that prison chaplain said that the busiest day in the prison for people lining up for the phone is Mother's Day. You know, they've got that one phone and prisoners line up down the hall. The emptiest day is Father's Day because so many prisoners don't know who to call or how to call or how to reach them. That's a powerful, powerful picture. But fathers are often absent from the home, and according to the U.S. Census Bureau, 24 million children between ages 1 and 3 live in a home where the biological father is absent. 24 million. And I just want to share some other statistics with you from a website called The Fatherless Generation. And here's what they tell us. Higher levels of academic performance and cognitive achievement and attained higher levels of education where there's a father in the home. More positive behavioral outcomes, lower levels of behavioral problems, less delinquency, less drug abuse, less incarceration. Fathers protect against the negative influence of peer drug abuse. That's when the father is present. When dad is home, there's higher standard of living, less poverty. Father absent homes are 4 times more likely to be poor. Girls are less likely to become pregnant and less sexual promiscuity where there is a father active in the home. 63% of youth suicides are from fatherless homes. 63%. That's 5 times the national average. 90% of all homeless and runaway children are from fatherless homes. 90%. That's 32 times the national average. 85% of all children who show behavioral disorders come from fatherless homes. That's 20 times the national average. 80% of rapists with anger problems come from fatherless homes, 14 times the average. 71% of all high school dropouts come from fatherless homes, 9 times the national average. 75% of adolescent patients in chemical abuse centers come from fatherless homes, 75%. That's 10 times the national average. 71% of pregnant teenagers lack a father in the house, in the home, from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Fatherless boys and girls are twice as likely to drop out of school, twice as likely to end up in jail, 4 times more likely to need help for emotional and behavioral problems. Studies on parent-child relationships and child well-being show that fatherly love is an important factor in predicting the social, emotional, cognitive development and functioning of children and young adults. That's the power of a father. And you don't have to be super dad. There's probably no such thing. The mere presence of a father in the home reduced aggressive behavior in the kids. But it was active and regular engagement with kids that reduced the risk of behavioral and psychological problems and boosted cognitive development. One of the leading experts says father engagement really seems to have an effect where it is most needed. What's the most common problem among teenage girls? Depression. And boys, you have delinquents. And these are precisely the problems that father engagement helps to reduce. So, Dad, you do make a difference. And fathers have the power to speak life-giving blessing into their children's life and produce outcomes with eternal significance, a blessing that goes far beyond words, far more important than getting a raise. It encompasses all that a man is and touches all that a boy or a girl will become. And I want to share 5 keys with you briefly. The first of these is modeling. Modeling, being a good father, isn't about being the kind of parent you are as much as it is what kind of person you are. Because becoming the person comes first, because the kind of person you are will dictate and determine what kind of parent you are. So we need to understand that. And you need to understand that children are watching and children are listening. And they soak up just about everything they see and hear, good or bad. And life lessons, everybody knows this, life lessons are more caught than taught. I don't know anybody who sits their children down after dinner and gives them a 30-minute lecture on morals and values. And who does that? Nobody does that, except maybe in some extreme or rare circumstance. So how do kids pick up our values? How do they learn about God and life and right and wrong and what's good and what's bad? Mostly just by watching us. Just by watching us and imitating, and they do. They imitate us. They're more caught than taught, and the most powerful lessons they learn from you will come from your life, not your mouth. And in fact, if your life isn't consistent with what you're saying, you're going to lose credibility, and your words will have no meaning at all. So when they look at us in terms of modeling, what do they see? A man who is consistent and committed to his faith, one who speaks the truth and is trustworthy, one who loves their mother, one who lives out of godly principles and kingdom values. One example is more valuable than 100 lectures. You teach what you know, you reproduce what you are. And that's why I took Cameron out of school one day when he was little. I took him out of school to take him over to San Francisco to the Olympic Club to see a PGA golf tournament. I forget how old he was. Maybe he was in junior high school. We went over there. And on the way, I stopped to get gas, and something happened. There was a malfunction at that pump, and I had to restart it, and I filled it up, and I went on my way. And I was about an hour away from the Shell station, and I suddenly realized, you know, I cannot fill up for X amount of dollars. And I realized that thing had reset, and it didn't register the amount of money that I should have paid. Well, I'm too far away, and I mentioned it to Cameron. On the way back, we stopped at the Shell station. I walked in and asked the guy, I said, did you come up short yesterday? He said, I did. I said, how much? He said, well, $10, $11. I said, well, it was me. It was an accident. I told him what happened. I'm here to pay it. And he said, well, you sure are honest. I said, let me tell you something. $10 is a small price for a clear conscience. I said, also, there's a little boy right here watching his daddy. Watching his daddy. If we're not together, though, those moments don't happen, do they? They don't happen. And so many of us miss those teachable moments because we're not present. The second word is this word, blessing. Spoken words of blessing. Spoken words of blessing. We had two of our granddaughters from, we're in our house this week, and of course, we take care of Isabella during the week. When they come, it's like, I am so happy to see you. I'm glad to see you. Good morning. Words of blessing. I'm glad to see you. I'm so happy that you're here. Words, positive words of affirmation, encouragement. Words that attest to their worth and their value. That reinforce and build up. And the most important words of all are those beautiful words, I love you. I never once in my whole life heard those words from my father. Not one time. You say, don't you think he loved you? I guess so, but that's the whole point. No child should ever have to guess about that. And why is it so hard to say those words, and especially for men? My children are grown, and you know that, and I still say it every day. They say it to me every day of their life. I made sure they heard that and knew that. This distorted caricature of manhood perpetrated by our society is the Rambo-type, macho, tough guy who's incapable of loving deeply and leave no room for tenderness. Can I remind you that the greatest expression of love the world has ever seen came from the heart of a father? A man, a real man. Speak words of blessing and encouragement, positive words. And when they mess up, you know, hey, it's okay. You've heard a good line, you know. You know what to tell them. There's a reason why they put erasers on the end of pencils. People make mistakes. You've heard that somewhere. It's okay. Bless your children. Number three, instruction. Psalm 78, 5 and 7. He decreed statutes for Jacob and established the law in Israel, which he commanded our ancestors to teach their children, so the next generation would know them, even the children yet to be born, and they in turn would tell their children. Then they would put their trust in God and would not forget his deeds, but would keep his commandments. I'm not talking about lecturing and that kind of thing, but there are so many opportunities to talk to kids and opportunities that present themselves in the course of life. You know, sometimes when you're watching television and something happens that is contrary to your values, here's a teaching moment. Do you take time to instruct and talk about, wait a minute, that's not what we approve of. That's not what we agree with. And they're probably watching to see if you'll keep watching it or have the moral aptitude to get up and turn the thing off. Do we really instruct? And if we have to correct and discipline kids, and that's an important part, we're going to talk about that in a minute, do we give them instruction and tell them why this is wrong and talk to them and listen to them? Do we do that? Is there instruction there? Are we really, really teaching our kids? And I hear people say, well, I'm not going to teach my kids about religion. Somebody, if you don't, somebody else is. You teach them to take a bath. You teach them to brush their teeth. You teach them about everything else. But you're going to let, who are you going to let? Some rap group teach them about God? Their peer group at school? What a crazy notion. Of course, and this right here says, you teach your children. And I know, listen, what's happened is, in many cases, what's happened is families have sort of, have turned that responsibility over to Sunday school classes and kids ministry, that the church will now do this. If your kids come to everything the church offers, how long are they here? How many hours do we have them? Two at the most? They're with you all the time. You are their most important caregiver. Home is where life makes up its mind. Listen, the church can never resurrect what the home puts to death. The main responsibility is at the home. There are all kinds of opportunities to do that. Bedtime stories when they're little. There's a great book called The Golden Treasure of Bible Stories for Children. Better yet, tell them the Bible stories in your own words. And oh, you can have some hilarious moments with your children. I'm thinking of one right now, but it'd take too long to tell it. Don't lecture, don't be preachy, but teach your children about God. Teach them about life. And I remind you, I've said it again, if you don't, somebody else is going to. And the fourth thing is discipline. You can't always be their buddy. Sometimes you have to be daddy. Don't confuse discipline with abuse. There's never, ever any place for abusing a child. Be the parent. Be the parent. And that doesn't mean be harsh. Doesn't mean any of that. Children need help setting boundaries. They can't possibly do that any more than you could when you were little. And deep down inside, they want your help. Boundaries give them a sense of security, provides them with protection, moves them in the right direction. But here's an important thing. You can never discipline beyond the depth of your relationship. You know, when Cameron was growing up, I'm sorry I didn't get his permission to use an example, and he's not in here right now, but he's probably hearing it. I'll hear about it later. But I mean, he's been big for a long time. Big old strapping boy in high school. His little mama here, believe me, she could discipline him. She could correct him. It'd be a mistake for you to try. You know why she could? He outweighs her three times. Because she has a relationship with him that you don't have. And if the only time you show up in is to be, you know, like the Gestapo coming out of the woodwork to enforce the rules, rules without a relationship will produce rebellion. You can never discipline beyond the depth of your relationship. And that's why, let me tell you, especially those who have young children, that relationship, believe me, when they get to be teenagers, you are going to need it. And if you wait until then to try to build it, you have waited too late. Get in their lives and build that relationship and love them. You know, we did things together. We swam together. We played together. Went to the parks. We did all those things. Be in their life. And that's the last thing. This thing is just called presence, being there. And it's the simplest things of all, but it's by far the most important. How can you model anything if you're never there? How can you bless and affirm your children if you are absent, if you never interact? How can you teach and discipline if you're a stranger to your children? Listen, Dad, this isn't hard. You don't have to have a PhD. You don't have to understand the mysteries of the universe. You don't have to be a star on the basketball court or be clever or funny or intelligent or talented. You just have to be there. You don't have to show off. Just show up. You didn't have to show off. Just show up. Just be there. They want you. And here's a very important lesson. If you expect to be in your children's memories tomorrow, you must be in their lives today. And the time for that will go by you so quickly before you know it. And once it's gone, it's gone. So today is a special day, Dad. And come next June, we'll celebrate it again. But what about all the days in between? From this June till the next June, what will it be like? Fathers continuing to live as role models and mentors for their kids. You've heard me every time I do a dedication of children and do a commitment with parents, I always tell them, you've heard me say it again and again, before they make a commitment to parenting their children, you've heard me say them, it will only take a few minutes to make this commitment. It will take the rest of your life to fulfill it. Not in big things, but in little things. Not all at once, but day by day in the daily grind and grit of living is where you can make a difference. Biologically, not that difficult to be a dad. The real challenge is to be a father. And the power that you have is what's missing in this country right now, more than anything is the power of fathers. Dad, would you stand, please? I want to pray for you, bless you, and love you, and thank you for, we have some great fathers here. We have some